If you've ever tried to hire a great salesperson, you know the pain. The interviewer goes, great. They say all the right things. You hire them. 3 months later, you're wondering, what happened? Here's the truth that most leaders don't know. Many recruiting firms are actually coaching the candidates on what to say because they get paid when they place the candidate, when the candidate gets hired. That's right, the system is broken. But today, we're having somebody who's fixing it. I'm joined by my friend and repeat guest, Jamie Crosby, founder and CEO of Proactivy, one of the only recruiting firms that measures the success of your ROI, not their placement fee. Jamie's worked with some of the biggest and largest recruiting firms in the world, and she saw firsthand how incentives were a little bit upside down. Today, she's pulling back the curtain and going to give us some inner secrets on hiring salespeople that actually perform and perform well. So, Jamie, welcome. You built your career on working with some of the biggest recruiting firms in the country. At what point did you realize that this traditional model wasn't just flawed, it was fundamentally broken?
Firstly, thank you so much for having me again, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be with you. So great to be here. And it was a culmination of data, I would say. I think I finally realized it when I was on the receiving end of it as the vice president of sales at CareerBuilder after serving in the traditional staffing industry. And like, as you said, working for bigger companies within that industry. And then as a vice president of sales at CareerBuilder, realizing, A, we couldn't find top performing salespeople on our site because the people on our site were looking typically for work and possibly or most often part of the unemployed or underperforming sales team members. And then we used recruiters. I knew from the inside that candidates were being coached on what to say to get the job because that's how the recruiter was paid and that there wasn't a deep qualification process. But then it became magnified as I was VP of sales running a huge sales organization and knowing that I had to have a funnel of top performers at my disposal or we wouldn't reach our year-over-year revenue growth goals. And so I started interviewing people coming from recruiters, and they were all sounding the same, like they were coached, right?
Wow.
Like robots, because the recruiter learned what we were looking for and then prepared them. So then I realized I'm not having authentic interviews. Mm. And we both know, Jim, that great salespeople know how to sell themselves in the interview process. So it was even twofold because not only do they know how to sell themselves, but now the recruiter's coaching them on what to say to get the job. So I knew there had to be a better way.
Was there a specific moment or a placement or client situation when you just thought about there's got to be a better way of doing this? You know, what was the epiphany for your changing the system?
Well, actually, I can't say there was a specific moment. It was a collection of moments. I always knew I wanted to have my own company one day. And so when I first started in the staffing industry, I really intentionally worked for entrepreneurial companies. So I would learn how to run a business and be involved in all levels of or all areas of the business. So sales, marketing, HR, operations, that I would understand all of these areas, finance. And then I was doing an entrepreneurial leadership course in an MBA program and realized, well, we had to write a business plan. And I realized, okay, I have an idea. I'm going to fill the gaps in the market with the traditional recruitment model and the online experience I've had as VP of sales at CareerBuilder and being a sales leader and create a model that fills in the gap. So I had to write a business plan for this class. I won in the business plan contest and I was traveling all the time as VP of sales, of course, at CareerBuilder. I was getting ready to have children and thought now is the time I want to, prior to having children, get this business started so that I'm home with my children some and not on the road all the time. And I can begin to make this shift in the marketplace and offer this higher value win-win type of model. So that's how it started. That was 20 years ago. I still remember day one, January 5th, 2005.
Wow.
But, you know, I just one day I do remember being at the airport traveling, not remembering even where I was going. And it was just kind of this revolving door. And I had just of travel and I had just written this business plan, won in the business plan contest and thought, now's the time. Now's the time I'm going to do it.
I love that. You know, most recruiters sound like they're in the business of selling hope. But you actually built a business around delivering proof. I think it's pretty amazing. So the broken recruiting model, let's talk a little bit about the traditional recruiting model and why it's broken. Because it's not inefficient. It's misaligned. And you said there's some fundamental conflict of interest. Recruiters get paid when the hire gets made, not when the hire performs. So how does that change the way they operate?
You know, think of it almost like your realtor. Your realtor makes more money based on, in a lot of structures, based on the price of your home.
Okay.
Now, great realtors are going to price it according to the market regardless. But there is a bit of a conflict. There can be a conflict there, right? Now, take that and magnify it times 100, because the traditional contingent recruiting model, one of the big secrets here is that traditionally those firms with that model only fill 10 to 15% of the searches that they do, because not because they're not great, because the client's not committed to them and they're not committed to the client because it's contingent upon a hire that they get paid. Now, because of that, the issues perpetuate themselves because they know that they're only going to get paid on 10 to 15% of what they work on. They can't do an in-depth qualification process of these candidates. They can't spend the time doing that, because it's a huge time investment. So the traditional model, it's typically a 20-30 minute phone screen, and clients feel like they're getting resumes slapped at them.
Okay.
That aren't deeply qualified. So that's one huge issue. The other issue is, you're absolutely right about the way they're paid. The best candidates go to the highest paid fees because that's how those fees are earned. And companies often don't know if they'll receive candidates or not, because a recruiter, if they can only fill 10 to 15% of what they work on, is going to work on the easiest to fill searches. So usually clients like to use a partner, a talent acquisition partner, when there are challenging roles or searches. However, that's where the misstep is, because in that traditional model, they're not going to always be working on those challenging roles.
Yeah.
They have less of a chance. And then the recruiter is paid based on the placement. And so, of course, they're coaching candidates on what to say to get the job. They learn you, and they know you want someone who says this or doesn't say this or asks these questions at the end, because you haven't hired the other people based on these reasons or whatever feedback you've given. It's like everything you say now can and will be held against you, because now you're getting someone who's, well, more prepared. So it doesn't work for sales, for sure. It's not that it could never work, but these are all challenges that have to be overcome. But for sales specifically, we know, I mean, as you know, Proactivate, my company, specializes in go-to-market roles, sales, marketing, sales operations, service, things that support revenue generation, all the way up to C-level in those areas. But those individuals know how to sell themselves in an interview. We need a 30-minute screen does not work. We need like an in-depth hour and a half to 2 hour sales behavioral interview that's customized for that role. And that's right there is the sweet spot of the core differentiator in a model that works for sales. But that's not how the traditional contingent model is structured.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. Why first, for context, for people who don't understand what the commission is or what the fee is, if you're recruiting a top salesperson in the general market, it's usually a percentage of their salary. Is that correct?
It's typically 1% per thousand of the first year's on target earnings, generally capped at like 25 to 30%. Yes.
Okay. So we're talking 25 to 30% of that salary.
Of the, not just the salary, the on target earnings. Yeah.
The on target earnings. Wow. Okay. So that can be a hefty payment. But I think one of the reasons, and you correct me if I'm wrong, and tell me why the companies keep falling for it, is if I go to a company and I say, no skin in the game. If they don't find anybody, I don't pay any money.
Exactly.
And it's only if they find somebody that I have to pay.
Right. That is so true. That is why people prefer this, you know, risk adverse model of, hey, there's no skin in the game. But that's also what's working against you. So here's what's interesting, because people love our model, but they want to still pay that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's interesting because it's such that like we've created a model that's different than that, as you know, but it's a win-win structure where they're also not paying just for interviews. They do have a guarantee of an outcome of a hire. Their investment is protected and they're paying less than the traditional model. And it's a flat fee. So no one's being coached on what to say to get the job, right? Because our talent managers are not paid based on placement intentionally to preserve the authenticity of the interview process. But companies do like to not have skin in the game. But what does no skin in the game mean? It means there's no commitment from the company and there's no commitment from you. Whereas a model where you have a dedicated resource, a recruiter, a talent manager that is guaranteed to deliver qualified candidates within a certain time frame, with a different fee structure than the contingent model, is actually much more effective. Now, I mean, there's always concerns and challenges like, well, what if we happen to find someone on our own? So you want a partner that would be flexible and apply that fee to a different search or take into account if they have or haven't presented candidates yet or things like that. You want a partner that's easy to do business with, right? And respects your investment as a true partner. And that's really, you know, that's the goal, right? Is to form long-term business relationships, not just get a quick fee for a quick placement. So yes, but that is typically the reason is the no skin in the game. And again, it works against you because now you're getting a bunch of resumes slapped at you that haven't been thoroughly or deeply qualified, have had a quick screen, and you may or may not even get that.
Huh. And one of the things that attracted me to your company as far as recommending it and referring it on sort of the consulting issues was some of the data behind the people that you hire, so that there's like a 90, what is it? I correct me if I'm wrong. I thought it was like 92% of the people that you place stay in that role for 2 years.
Yes, at least 2 years. That's sort of like the minimum threshold, but there's a much higher probability of success, right? And there's a much higher probability of success because we're also structuring it very differently than like the traditional initial recruitment conversation of like XYZ company has a role where you don't like no one's trusting each other even to say the name of the company because they're afraid they won't get their fee and you'll go directly there. So they're not even able to attract the same type of talent. You know, we're able to attract a different level of talent because we're just coming out and saying the name of the company and that we're the first step in the interview process and serving as their eyes and ears in the market for top talent. They feel like we're a part of that, not like we're representing some mysterious company. But these people are going through an hour and a half to 2 hour in-depth qualification process with us. So that's like most companies' first couple steps of their interview process. So now they've been qualified even much more thoroughly once they get through the company's process as well. And the probability of success then is greater because there's a much more in-depth process. The other piece of this is just the investment of time for the leaders, the hiring leaders within that company, because a lot of times they're having to interview a bunch of unqualified people or have the opportunity cost of an open position. Whereas in a different model, like, I mean, obviously I know our model, but it could be, these could be examples for any model you would look for.
Yep.
Is that you would want to know that you have a guarantee of candidate delivery within a time frame. So in our model, they have a dedicated talent manager and a committed result of receiving three qualified candidates that are guaranteed to match their profile within a few weeks maximum, and that our ratios are minimally that one out of three are hired, but that we won't stop until a hire is made. So they've got that dedicated resource and committed result within a time frame. And people are interviewing three great people, not having to go through so many unqualified people to find that needle in the haystack.
Yeah, I like that. So I want to hit on another myth is hiring an unemployed salesperson might sound like a good idea, but it's usually not. Why is that such a risky move?
Well, typically, I mean, let's just take right now, the unemployment rate's like 4.5%, I believe, last month. Up a little bit. So people think, hey, there could be some good people in the market. And you know what? There could be anomalies to this. So don't take it personally if you are the anomaly listening to this, because there are some legitimate business units in sales being laid off. It's not typical, though, and it's not typically the top performers. So what companies do a lot of the times when they don't want to have a talent acquisition partner because they don't want to pay a fee, or they're just relying on HR who doesn't have the time to proactively recruit people that are working and winning, they can post. And it's typically the post and pray method, right? But the posting is the like 4.5% unemployed audience. That's who's typically replying to these posts, because they're not employed, right? The people who are working and winning have to be courted to be aware of the opportunity. So when you're hiring the unemployed salesperson, you are picking the best of the worst. And I just hate to say it like that. In most cases, you are fishing in the pond of the unemployed, which are most often the C players who got fired for not hitting quota. And you're trying to find the best in that group versus saying, I want to have exposure to 100% of the market, the people that are working and winning, and then I want to find the best of the best. And that's what our model is, right? 90% of the people we present are working and winning. The 10% delta there is that anomaly of someone who legitimately moved to a new state with their spouse, or the company really did like shut down a division or lay off the, or it was based on when they were hired, not their performance, things like that. But that's really hard to kind of decipher. And so it's really important in any strategy to be looking at how to expose yourself to working and winning talent.
Yeah, exactly. The best salespeople are rarely looking because they're busy winning. And I've seen companies hire whoever's available and end up paying for, you know, missed quota 6 months. So if the old model doesn't work, help me understand the alternative. What's your alternative to this?
Well, our alternative is a completely different model. I would say it's not, you know, it's definitely not the contingent model. It's not the traditional retained where you pay this high fee and you may or may not get a hire and you have to pay it up front. It's a hybrid and it's a win-win model. It's a flat fee, number one. So it's not based on comp. Our talent managers are not based on placement. We are specialized in revenue generating roles and leadership in those roles. And that's important because we get sales. And the biggest differentiation in our model is our qualification process. We're second to none in the marketplace in this area because we are taking candidates through such an in-depth, customized qualification process that's a behavioral-based interview that's an hour and a half to 2 hours. And most companies stop short at the skill set component, like sales success track record, sales methodology, metrics for success, but they don't interview with all of the components. Mindset is 80% of success. And
I agree.
People don't know how to interview based on it. So our qualification process is skill set, it's mindset, it's simulation evaluation, seeing them in action and key components of the role. And then it's inputting whatever assessment the company wants to use into the process, if they have one that they want to use and they feel, you know, like that's an important piece. We put that into the process of considering them qualified. If not, we have our own mindset assessment because that's custom to us. And that's a part of our process. But we're talking to a lot of people to bring and serve up the three best of the best. And in our model, they have a dedicated talent manager. And that talent manager is committed to providing those three top candidates within a few weeks maximum. And if for any reason they don't hire one of the three, we immediately provide additional interviews until the hire is made. And it's more cost effective than the traditional model.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but why can we do that? You know, because sometimes people will be like, well, how can you do that? Because the fee's better. And I'm like, because we get paid on 100% of what we work on.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're, that's why they have to charge so much, because they are getting paid on 10 to 15% of what they work on in contingent firms.
And a lot of, you know, you think about that, that's, you know, 85% to 95% of wasted time that you're not getting paid on.
Right.
And so it's demotivating from all sides there.
Absolutely.
So you talk about your process, the proactivated work, pre-work for people who don't know what that means. What is, did we just talk about a little bit about what's involved, the mindset and the things like that, or is there more to it? Or
yeah, there's more to it. I'm glad you mentioned that because for us, I mean, there's, you know, one thing that's very unique in the beginning is there's a very intentional implementation process where we are helping the company, taking them through a series of questions on our implementation call to identify their ideal candidate profile. And it's very hard to know that you got somewhere if you don't know where you're going, right? So to speak.
Yeah.
So people have job descriptions-ish, but an ideal candidate profile is so much more. It includes cultural elements. It actually includes how to we court people like this. What's your story in the market, client, to attract top talent? What are your competitive differentiators? Not to sell business, but to sell talent on the opportunity to come to you. And that's really a paradigm shift, right? We're used to interviewing people just like to see if we want them. But the right people, we have to make them want us too. And so we need a story in the marketplace as to how we impact lives, what it feels like to work there. We need to understand the leadership they're working with and what style works in, you know, what type of person based on the leadership style, the culture, the non-negotiables for the role. So we're building all this into the ideal candidate profile. If they have top performers in the role, we'll interview them to see, you know, what attributes we need to build in from that. And from that ideal candidate profile, we then create our own customized talent acquisition plan, which is how do we go to market and find people who are working and winning today? Where are they naturally looking for leads or business acumen? Where are they online? What types of networking events are they at or trade shows? So we're customizing a recruiting strategy, so to speak, around that profile, and then customizing our in-depth qualification process, which is what you had mentioned includes the skill set component, mindset component, the simulation evaluations, all of that is customized based on that initial ideal candidate profile. So there's a lot of intention, right, behind each step of our process to then be able to bring the client the three best of the best people that are on the market for that role and ultimately the hire. And then, of course, we guarantee the hire.
Yeah, I like that. Now, thinking about this, what are some of the invisible checks that companies don't even think to do? Some of those things that they should think about, but they don't.
So I think a couple of things. One, we often don't do, we most companies, I think, miss the step of even identifying what's the ideal profile of the person we're wanting. And we often interview people just kind of thinking of our own image and people we like and hiring people like us. So it's really important we have an objective process, right, that we're evaluating people on. And I think our process helps with that because it's definitely that upfront. But it's really important to identify that component. And then another huge miss is just that most companies are developing people and hiring people based on skill set. And that is 20% of their success.
Yeah.
And so it's a huge missed opportunity to not interview based on the components that set people apart. I mean, Jim, if we think about the best athletes in the world, or the best CEOs or business people, what are the things that separate them?
Yeah.
Right? Their grit, their perseverance, their like just I'm going to win no matter what mentalities, their practice, their commitment. They had to have a natural talent, right? Thinking of the athletes.
Yeah.
What separates the best of the best are mindset components. So we've got to interview based on all of those components. And if we're stopping short of that and we're just interviewing on skill set, we're interviewing about 20% of what we need, not for the full 100%. So that's a huge opportunity, I think, for most companies.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, really true. I was thinking about that. I was working with one of the best of the best of the best of the best golfers. You know, he was really good. And I said, so are you a scratch golfer? And he's like, oh, no, I'm much better than that. I said, oh, you're a really good golfer. And as we got to talking, he hadn't won a game in a long time. Mm. And I noticed his hat, you know, he's got his ping hat on. He's got a book. I'm sitting across from him on the airplane. And he's a little bit tense. He's a little bit frustrated. And going in and kind of unlocking that mind, you know, and changing that mindset. After that, he won the next two tournaments and qualified for the PGA. And I said, how did that work out for you? He's like, oh my gosh, it was really, really good. But, you know, being able to unlock somebody or looking at that mindset or going on what's, you know, that's more in development. But if you've got to have the skill set. That's a variable, but
yes,
the skill set does not determine if you're going to win that golf game or you're going to close that sale or get it. So I think that's really, really good. Another analogy I think is, you know, a lot of times salespeople is looking for a needle in a haystack. And I believe Proactivate is like just having this giant magnet that goes over the haystack and it just pulls up all the needles. And I think that's a beautiful analogy for what you do. Having experienced it with going through and working with other companies and having to get to work with some of your people on interviewing top salespeople.
Yes, I love that analogy. I would like to use that in the future and I will give you credit.
I've already copyrighted it. So, you know, we'll have to talk to my people.
My people talk to your people about that. But that is absolutely right. There are so many people to go through, and especially if you're looking online and kind of honestly, when you're looking at the 4.5%, it's kind of counterintuitive, but then you're having piles like this to find the needle in the haystack versus just trying to attract the court and attract the people working and winning and bring them to you. But yeah, that's exactly right. Either way, we are scanning the market to find the best of the best and bring them forward.
I got another one for you.
Gosh.
You're not sending companies resumes.
No.
You're sending revenue generators.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. And also, it does remind me, we are actually not just sending resumes, right? We're scheduling interviews.
Right.
With, you know, we're sending candidate submittals, which is different than sending resumes because the submittals are based on the ideal candidate profile. We're saying, okay, this is how the person lines up. This is what we found in our qualification process. These are the highlights and why we really like them. And here are some areas to dig deeper into. And by the way, here's the resume. Because what's the resume? I mean, it's a sales collateral piece, right? So we want the real stuff here. I always liken, here's my analogy. This is my favorite analogy. Sales recruiting is like dating, right? I mean, we first date is like dating someone's sales department. I always say, because, you know, I'm a single woman. If I'm on a date, a first date, I'm like, I don't want to date your sales team. I want to date your operations team. Don't start anything you can't continue.
Yeah.
And that's really the first interview. You're getting the very best, and it usually goes downhill from there, right? I mean, it's like you get the very, very best. People bring their best. So we have to dig under the surface to get to really who they are. Mm. And that's how we design our interview, right? To get over the high level surface, or to get under the high level surface and really look at who they are and can they replicate their success within our client's organization.
Yeah, I like that. Now, you and I both know this. When we think about, you know, ROI on a salesperson, companies will spend six figures on a salesperson who never performs. But when it's done right and you get a great salesperson, you can get 10x on that investment. So how do you help CEOs calculate the ROI on this sales hire before they make it?
Well, there are a couple things, right, to look at there. It's impact in that role, right? I mean, if you just look at the revenue impact, if someone's expected to produce $1 million in new business revenue, there's an opportunity cost of not having the position filled. And then there's a major cost of having it filled with a poor performer.
Right.
And that is estimated to be around 30% to 500% of their compensation. And that's not even considering the opportunity cost component. But when we make a bad hire, and so, I mean, I help a CEO to answer your question by educating them, but also by getting them the right people that they can then onboard well to have them make the return on investment. But the education piece is critical because poor performers, it's not just that, right? What we're not thinking about is our leadership investment of time, the time it took to onboard them, and the story it tells the rest of the organization when you hold on to C players or performers, right? That you accept mediocrity. And there is a 67% variance of production between a top performer and a poor performer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's contagious. So it really, really matters. It's the lifeblood of an organization, right? I mean, that is the lifeblood of the company. It's a huge asset. This makes me think of like a proactive approach, no pun intended, proactivate, but a proactive approach to hiring is revenue insurance. It's protecting your revenue. And we make much better hires when we are proactively, continually interviewing great people. And that's really that's why our model was created, is to have companies think about what C players, what percent of C players do they have on their team? What are their growth goals in terms of new markets or geographically or vertically or products or services? And what do they need in terms of talent to support that? And then where do they possibly have open positions right now? And look at all of those components and say, based on that, let's say the number is 12 people, you know, adding all that up, then you want to interview 36 great people in that 12-month time period if you think you're going to need to hire 12. So let us deliver 3 a month consistently so you always have a funnel, not just a sales funnel, but a funnel of talent. Because we're spending $1 trillion on sales annually as a nation, and then we need to protect it. And so this is our revenue insurance.
No, I like that. That's a really different way of looking at it. And that just kind of reframed my thinking a little bit on that. So a couple questions for you. First is about metrics. So what metrics matter most in the world? You know, activity, conversion, culture fit. And then what are the early warning signs that a salesperson...
Yeah, so I think you can tell within the first 30 to 90 days with some early warning signs. So I think that's a great question. So the metrics, I think the metrics are different for each role, dependent on if it's new business focused or client growth and retention or things like that. But let's just take new business as an example. I think, and it depends on if you're making those appointments yourself or not. What's really critical here is that you know the formula for success in the role. And that's part of identifying the ideal candidate profile. But if there's an outreach component that then leads to, let me start with the bottom. There's just the leads, just the general leads component that then leads to qualified leads, that then leads to a number of dials or outreaches, that then leads to a number of scheduled appointments, that leads to a number of completed appointments, that leads to closed deals. And a great salesperson will be able to articulate their formula for success and what separates them from the other part of the sale. If they're in the top 10%, then what do they do differently than the other 90%? And if they can articulate that very clearly with the metrics, then it's much more likely they can replicate that at your organization. Just if I go run a marathon and I have my best time yet, and I can tell you how I made it happen. I did this many runs a week. I did this many weight workouts. I ate this type of food. If I don't know how it happened, I just got lucky that day. Like I just maybe landed this big deal that someone landed in my lap. So we want them to have very specific metrics for sure.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, when I think about leadership and culture and why that matters, I've seen a lot of great salespeople fail when there's poor communication, unclear goals, no accountability. And that's why, you know, when I go into companies, I do that leadership audit because I'm looking at alignment, execution, capacity. I'm looking at all these data points on communication. I think one of the big one is relational trust, where people feel safe to give pushback to some of their people, and they're not quiet about that, because you got to have a little bit of that in there. And I think that's really, really important to say, not only do you got to think about when you're going out about that, is thinking about, okay, I can find a great salesperson, but when you are going into that dating analogy and you look at the operations and say, wow, I don't know if we can serve you. I don't know if we can help you. Is there times where you are not a good fit for some companies?
Oh, with that we as Proactivate are not a good fit. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think there are, because there are companies that maybe want help finding the best of the best people, but aren't able to either offer them a competitive. I don't want companies to overpay. And I think that's the other area that we help, is do that comp analysis to see what the market's really bearing.
Yeah.
But I don't want them to underpay either, to where then they're at risk of losing the asset that they just gained. And so I think, you know, being willing to really look at the market to see what it bears to get that level of talent's important. And of course, we're working within whatever their constraints are, but that affects, that's got to be aligned with their profile, with the ideal candidate profile. So that could be a factor. Or culturally, they don't have an environment where they can retain talent. And we can help with that, right? We can help with that in other ways. But I think it's really that value alignment there, that they really want to have that. They want to have, you know, the right structure to attract the people, and then the right onboarding and culture to retain the people. And I mean, there's, you know, certainly in 20 years, there have been times where we have said, I don't know that I feel comfortable recommending talent here. Mm-hmm. So we're probably not the best fit.
Yeah, they probably sell used car warranties or something like that.
Something like that.
A fancy meeting you here. There's so many memes on that. It's so funny. When you talk about, when you're thinking about, you know, your partnership, typically company comes to you, they're finding a revenue asset. But when we talk about culture and leadership, a lot of times, you know, you're hiring, you know, a CRO, a VP of sales, a district sales manager, some of those things. Talk to me a little bit about how that process goes, because I've been in organizations and I've talked to salespeople, and one of them told me something very amazing. He says, I've been with this company for 18 months. I've had 8 managers. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
That's incredible. How do you vet somebody who's a good sales manager, sales leader, heading up a team to get that team really producing?
That's such a great question. And how unfortunate in that situation you just shared with 8 leaders in that short time frame. The process is actually very similar. What's different are the questions and the simulations, and possibly that in those scenarios, we might present 5 people instead of 3 or something where they just have they have a little bit more of a market taste before making a decision. But I want to clarify something. We present whatever number it takes to get to the hire. It's just typically 1 out of 3 for us. That's the ratio. So that's where we start, because we want to use their time well, but we're going to get to the hire regardless. Now, for a leadership role, it's really important that our simulations are maybe simulating a team meeting, a development meeting, a tough conversation with an employee. And so we're doing simulations where we see their leadership in action and really evaluating, are they leading people for influence or are they managing things? What we do know for leaders is the best leaders aren't necessarily the best salespeople. It's not just an automatic, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to see, and we're always looking to see, this will be the next step of their career and an upgrade, but they have some proven track record in it. So how is their sales team today performing? Where were they performing when they started?
Yep.
What did they put in place to get them from here to here? I think there are some very good leadership tells, right?
Okay.
Yeah, in terms of how they structure their leadership. What's their mindset and skill set and all of those same components, but also, like, do they know their team members' bigger why? Or are they just managing to the what, which is the company quota and the company revenue goal? And of course, they have to manage to that, but they can influence much differently if they're leading to their why. Because, you know, someone on their own, a salesperson might perform here, and a good leader can't necessarily motivate them, but they can help change their trajectory of success to here. So we want to understand their leadership methodologies and really how they've successfully performed in the past, because the past performance is the biggest indicator of future performance. Those are all different components that, you know, would be added to that rubric of identifying great talent.
Yeah, I always look at, you know, are they calling up or calling out? You know, are they a Salesforce jockey? Or are they, you know, good at at actually coaching. You know, when you talk about mindset, it's so important, and a good manager coaches that. I think we're in a unique place right now with AI. So I found that a lot of sales interviews, people are actually asking questions about how the person uses AI, because that's a talent that if a salesperson doesn't or is not using that, I think that's going to, you know, 12 to 18 months, that's really going to be a detriment. Do you guys go into that at all as far as looking at how a salesperson uses AI?
Well, it's certainly interesting and definitely based on the role that they're looking at. Yes, that's a component. It's what's interesting too is not just in business, but in universities, whereas they used to look at that as cheating. Now they're like, okay, here's a homework assignment to use AI effectively.
Here. Yeah.
And so, yes, we want to, you know, be able to qualify, especially if that's part of someone's new role, then we want to be able to qualify that they've done it effectively in the past, whether it's AI or anything, really. But mm-hmm. how are they using the tools that they have to be more effective and to execute well and in the most effective way? So AI is definitely a big piece of that. I mean, you cannot really enter any role and not understand how to use that as an asset.
Yeah, I think it's important in that, you know, helping people communicate. It's having well-crafted emails, having people understand and uncover the pain better. And it's like having a PhD in your pocket that you don't have to pay for. It's having like a brilliant McKinsey analyst that you don't have to pay for that makes that salesperson look at a different level. And it helps customers make a better buying decision because it's an easy button for them. It's like, oh, okay, this is so clear. And I think, you know, identifying pain and going through and painting pictures, it's a wonderful tool. Those NLP, the natural language processing models that, you know, it just really knows the English language well and how to give metaphors and things that are really helpful tools in communicating. But I just was thinking about that as we were talking about hiring. Jamie, every time we talk, I'm reminded, you know, that salespeople aren't just found by luck. You know, they're identified, they're vetted, and they're aligned with the right culture. And that's what Proactivate, I believe, does better than anybody else. So, you know, I want people to know if you're looking to hire salespeople, stop throwing darts in the dartboard. You just go to proactivate.net. Is it proactivate.net?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to put a copy in that. And then just think about this as the time that it saves you, the quality of the salesperson that gets in there. Because I think of it this way. If I'm going to hire a salesperson, and let's say we're using $120,000 a year for a really good one, it doesn't cost me $120,000 a year for a good salesperson. It's an investment. I'm getting a return on that investment.
Yeah.
And so it's an investment that I'm going to pay in. If I'm going to look for an investment in the marketplace, I want to make sure that I don't have any blind spots with this investment, that there's something I'm missing, that I didn't see the charts right, or I didn't see how this is going to work out. And so that's where I think Proactivate is a really, really good team member or partner for you to be with. So I wanted to throw that out there, and thank you again for your opportunity to just talk with you. I think what you're doing is just amazing. Is there anything that you wish I should have asked you that I didn't?
No, actually, not at all. I think love your perspective and just how you really compared the different options that are out there to help people understand what's behind it. I really enjoyed being able to share the model in a way that just lets people know what's behind the scenes and the why behind it. Because the why behind it is really to create that win-win. And, you know, obviously for them to outperform their revenue goals with the right people.
So you don't have to give me exactly amount, but if I'm hiring a $120,000 salesperson, I go to one of these recruiting firms, I'm going to pay them for finding me a salesperson at least $30,000 to find that person.
It's going to be $25,000 to $30,000. Yeah. And ours is a flat fee that is, well, I mean, about a third or a half of that, depending on volume. So that's why I say, like, for us, it's a flat fee. If it was a one-time search for that role that you just mentioned, it would be a flat fee of $16,000. But if they think they're going to have a few searches within the 12-month time period, then the fee drops. And then if they think they're going to have, you know, 12 searches within that time frame, the fee drops. So the flat fee is based on volume.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll kind of look with them at the 12-month time period and what they expect, or they can just do a one-time search. And that's the flat fee. And it's much more economical than the traditional model.
Well, from a business model, it makes sense to me because it's like, okay, I'm going to pay a fee no matter what. Do I pay it up front and get a little bit better and have somebody dedicated to going to it and it's a less fee up front? Or do I, you know, wait for, you know, roll the dice and hope for, you know, a good person that hasn't been coached to get the job, you know?
Well, yes. And may I say that our fee is not up front. We do invoice upon implementation, but they're not paying us to start the search. We invoice, it's due net 30, and they're guaranteed to receive 3 qualified candidates within a few weeks. So mm-hmm. they are guaranteed to have candidates prior to when they're paying. And we protect their investment within the agreement by saying that we won't stop until the hire is made. So it really is structured to protect them and to make sure they get the best of the best talent. And so that's why I say it's more of a hybrid model or a contained. It's not the traditional retained. It's certainly not the contingent model. And it's structured with that leader in mind, because I was in your shoes. I was the VP of sales, and I understand that. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That maybe was the one thing that I didn't mention. So there you go. We found the question. And it's just always a pleasure to.
Well, I think it works. I'm excited about interviewing you. I'm glad I have you as a friend. And look forward to talking to you again next time. Hopefully I'll find a couple clients that I can send your way.
Well, I greatly appreciate it. We love to impact those clients and just to get to work with you and represent you in the market.
Thank you.